CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com. How y'all doing? It's Zim Conversations, yet another amazing edition. We have a phenomenal individual in the studio today. Unfortunately, it's just me, your boy KF. Trevor Ngube, former teacher, executive editor of the Financial Gazette, and currently the owner of the Maidon Garden Media Group South Africa and AMH Zimbabwe. Mr. Ngube, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mr. Ngube, just for those people who don't know, who are not too well versed with, you know, your operations and where you started, can you give us a short rundown of your career from teaching to now owning numerous publications?
Wow, that's a long time to cover. It's been a very exciting life, exciting career, and a very blessed one indeed. Mm-hmm. I started off by accident, really, some people would say, but I think that's the path that God had created for me. I got into to do a part-time television program, Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation. And it was whilst I was doing that very successful prime time television program that the proprietors of the Financial Gazette supported me. So they headhunted me, and cut a long story short, they offered me a job. Whilst I was at that time a teaching assistant at the University of Zimbabwe. I finished my Bachelor of Arts. Then I was doing research for an MPhil, DPhil.
Okay.
So whilst I was doing that, this is when they spotted me doing this television program. And then I joined the Financial Gazette as assistant editor. I was in that position for about 2 years. Okay. Then I became editor, and then I became executive editor.
That was in 1981.
Yeah, so I was basically 7 years
at
the Financial Gazette. By the time I ended, I was on the board, and I was executive editor. I think it's important for your listeners to appreciate the fact that I got into journalism. I was never trained as a journalist.
Okay.
I never went to school as a journalist. So I learned journalism
on the ground,
on the job, as it were. And then, fortunately, unfortunately, I got fired in 1994, 1995.
What prompted that, Mr. Mwe?
The Financial Gazette that I was editing, we ran a story, a Reuters story about President Robert Mugabe flying to Lesotho and his pilot doing something to try and land before the other aircraft that was in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a story that was taken very negatively by State House. And the next morning, there were headlines all over the place, you know, that my proprietors
should
fire me. And the proprietors fired me. And I was without a job for 3 months. I scratched around trying to figure out what to do and looking for a job. I came to South Africa looking for a job. I put in an application at the Mail and Garden. They declined me. I applied to the Sunday Times. I was interviewed a couple of times. I thought the job would come, but the job never came. And then I went back home. And then I figured out, you know, what do you do? I've got rent to pay. I've got a family to take care of.
Yeah.
I started looking around for people that would want to get into, publishing newspapers. And I picked up the word in the market that, the guys who used to own the Financial Gazette were in the market, trying to start something. So we got together and, we launched, the Zimbabwe Independent in 1995.
Okay.
And, we have never looked back since
then. That's an amazing story, especially considering that you said you were declined at the Mail and Guardian.
Yeah.
I think, this is the background information to everything that's currently going on. But I think, of course, with media, and with the situation that's in Zimbabwe, the elephant that's in the room, let's look at the obstacles that people like yourself, individuals, not just journalists, but also the owners of publishing houses in Zimbabwe face currently.
Wow, it's been a very sad turn of events, you know, given where we started off 1995, you know, very profitable operations. We started with one newspaper with 14 people. And 14, 16 years down the line, we were employing over 400 people with four titles, four newspapers: the Zimbabwe Independent, the Standard, Newsday, and the Southern Eye.
Mm-hmm.
But we have seen, even during those 16 years, the environment in Zimbabwe for media, for journalists, for proprietors, has always been very hostile.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've had our government is very intolerant to different points of view.
Oh, exactly.
Our government is very critical and intolerant to criticism. So criticism immediately defined you as an enemy of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen, you know, journalists being arrested, mm-hmm. journalists being tortured. People like Mark Chavunda was tortured, you know, for almost a week. We've lost count of how many journalists have been arrested. And
licenses being retracted. I'm not too sure what that organization was called that was run by Mahofa.
That's
Mahoso.
Mahoso. Yeah, he's still, he's still the chairman of the media and information something.
Yeah, I can't remember. MIC Commission, MIC, I think,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And so they're still there and they're wielding tremendous power and I think to a very large extent directed to those people that are perceived to be against the government.
Mm-hmm.
The economic situation is pretty bad. And as a result, both the economic situation and the political situation, the repression, the media laws that are pretty repressive,
mm-hmm.
the political environment that's intolerant to criticism, the economic environment that has led to economic collapse and mm-hmm. Hyperinflation and then introduction of the US dollar has seen talent move out of Zimbabwe. So
exactly.
It's difficult to get good people, good talent is moved mm-hmm. out of Zimbabwe. The people that are left, you know, are people that are really committed to being mm-hmm. to being back home in Zim or have no
other option.
Options mm-hmm. to go to. The economics of operating in Zimbabwe has become very difficult. You know, people don't have money to buy newspapers. Newspapers mm-hmm. are perceived as a luxury. On the advertising side, advertisers too don't have money to advertise.
Yeah.
And it's a very tight environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen all around. It's difficult at the moment in Zimbabwe to find anybody, people who are paid on time. We have companies that have not paid salaries for 6 months,
exactly.
Companies that have not paid salaries for a year and so forth. So it's a very tough economic environment. And at some point, you wonder how long this is going to continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many publications do you still have in the country at this point in time?
We have three publications. We have four, rather. The fourth one is an online-only publication, and that's Southern Eye.
Okay.
We have a business publication called the Zimbabwe Independent, which is basically our first product. And then we've got our Sunday newspaper, The Standard, and then we've got our, which at the moment is our flagship, which is Newsday.
Newsday, yeah.
Yeah.
And how are they performing?
It's tough. We're holding our own, you know, keeping head above water under very difficult economic circumstances. We're battling like everybody else to be able to pay our bills, to pay our staff.
Exactly.
The government is battling to pay staff and that kind of stuff. So we are in that kind of environment. You know, it's not easy to. So the thing in Zimbabwe at the present moment is that management is focused on debt collection. People don't have money to pay you. So yeah. you've got to be looking around for who owes me and who can pay.
Exactly.
Who's on, most people are on 190 days. Some people are even on more than 190 days. Understand the situation that this is an environment where companies are closing down almost every day.
Exactly.
Liquidations are taking place almost every day. So you find in your book you're sitting with people that advertised with you, that did business with you, that are no longer in existence.
Exactly. So where are you going to get your money
exactly.
from?
That's so it's a very tough environment, yeah.
But then the problem, Mr. Ngobe, is that if you do, because of the economic situation, you know, the whole situation in Zimbabwe itself, the Herald has a monopoly.
Yeah.
And if the few players that are there to give a more objective view of, you know, the state of the nation, if you were to phase out, where do you think the country would stand in terms of media?
Mm. Well, I think a minor correction there. I think consumption of media in Zimbabwe has been fascinating because we've seen with the introduction of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
The Daily News, and other online publications. I think I would want to argue that the statistics would show that the the Zim papers don't have the kind of monopoly that we think they have.
Okay.
People have a choice. People are now reading online. They're now reading the independent publications that are there, daily news, ourselves,
exactly,
and that
kind
of stuff. And that is as it should be. People should be given the choice to decide what to read and not be forced to read the stuff that the government thinks is appropriate or proper for them to read. So it would be sad, a sad situation where we see the gains that we have seen in terms of media plurality being affected by either politics or economics. It's important, I think, as far as I'm concerned, that you know, for a developing society, a free media is very important because at the end of the day, it's the conversations that take place in society,
exactly,
helped by what the media is publishing, that helps the emergence of good ideas. I usually talk about a marketplace of ideas. You cannot have a marketplace of ideas where there's one predominant viewpoint
and there's repression and of any other sorts of thinking.
You can't have so. You know, the societies that succeed tend to be societies where there's a vibrant marketplace of ideas, and the ideas sharpen each other, and the best ideas emerge. And those best ideas are the ones that then drive economic growth and prosperity.
Speaking of which, we look at a lot of these laws that have been passed by our government. I think IPA was one that really did affect the media community in the country. Now they're looking at the new one. Alex Magaisa was reviewing it on social media, the Cyber Terrorism Act.
Yeah.
Where do you see that going?
They're calling it the Social Media Bill, which is, again, so why are they coming up with the Social Media Bill? This is the same government which has been ridiculing social media as a force for activism.
Yes. And Mugabe, WhatsApp.
Exactly. But what we're seeing now is this is an admission that social media has become a force for change.
Exactly.
I think particularly if you consider that mobile penetration in Zimbabwe is in excess of 95%. Internet penetration is around about 48%. And of that, 35% is accounted for by WhatsApp usage.
Wow.
So WhatsApp usage is pretty high. So the government, which thought that ZBC and Zim Papers control the narrative, are finding that ZBC and Zim Papers are marginalized, that the narrative is actually being shaped on social media. So this is the knee-jerk reaction, control type of reaction that we've always known from ZANU-PF. They can't deal with a new phenomenon. They can't deal with new things.
They fail to adapt.
They can't. They can't innovate. So what they're doing is control. So they're wanting to control social media and bringing in this element that there's social media terrorists. So they're using the language of the Americans and dealing with terrorists as a way of dealing with a very vibrant conversation that is taking place about governance issues.
Amongst citizens.
Absolutely. whether they will win or not, I don't know. But I doubt that they'll be able to intimidate people, to harass people, to stop expressing their views. It's essentially an attempt to clamp down on the vibrant conversation that is taking place around issues of justice, issues of poverty, and issues of repression.
Exactly. And I think it's very unfortunate. We've spoken about this a lot on the show, that our neighbors have really failed to step in where it's important. We've seen in the past couple of months a lot of police brutality. There have been videos going around on social media. There have been photographs. There have been people coming out with their own testimonies to say, I'm a victim. I remember back at some point in time here in South Africa, the SABC blacklisted you amongst others as critics of Mugabe. How did that all shape out? Where did that come from?
Well, to your point about our neighbors having stepped out, I now hold the view that the struggle that we face in Zimbabwe, because it's a struggle, let's face it. We face a struggle of a 92-year-old who's been in power for 36 years
exactly.
and doesn't want to let go. And a few people around him who are corrupt and want him, are using him for to perpetuate their corrupt activities. And I think it's important for us to realize that struggle is ours as Zimbabweans, first and foremost.
Yes, true.
This notion that SADC owes us a living. We need to disabuse ourselves of that. The notion that the EU and the Americans ought to jump in and help us, that we need to disabuse of ourselves of that notion. We need to realize that it's up to us as Zimbabweans to fight the struggle of liberating ourselves from an oppressive regime.
It's fundamentally
important. If neighbors do come in and offer help on the back of what we've been able to do, and remember, this fight is a peaceful fight.
Mm-hmm.
It's us speaking up, against the repression that we're facing, speaking up against the injustice, speaking up against them. The corruption that we're experiencing in Zimbabwe is a non-violent
social... But I think the problem now comes up where most people are used to being, are used to the repression. They're used to security services being used to make them to keep quiet. So I think the international community, or let's just talk of our immediate neighbors, SADC coming in, is where people are saying, you know what, the minute I speak, I'll either be arrested, disappear, or something is going to happen to me. And I think there's fear. Fear has been instilled in us from the late 1980s, Gukurahundi, and all the way through, the 1990s and now the 2000s. And I think that's where most people would want to then say, okay, are we going to get anywhere by peacefully protesting against a regime that's obviously very violent and militant?
You can't fight violence with violence.
With violence. Mm-hmm.
And you can't fight a violent regime with violence. I mean, what do you do? I mean, they are armed to the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
They've just bought new Israeli water cannons and tear gas. So they're armed to the teeth. So you're not going to fight the struggle through violent means. We have to be a bit sophisticated. And by that, I mean, we have to, in a peaceful manner, state our position. And I think if we do that, we will make progress. People like Mahatma Gandhi,
mm-hmm.
Made progress in India, mm-hmm. Using nonviolent means. Mm-hmm. People like Martin Luther King
exactly.
Employed nonviolent forms of protest as a way of exposing the kind of repression, the kind of racism that was practiced in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So we can win that. It's important to admit that. Yes, we have this fear that has been ingrained in us as a society over the past 36 years.
Mm.
There's no lying that, the Robert Mugabe regime is perhaps one of the most brutal on the continent. I stand to be corrected, but our president has boasted about the degrees of violence that he has. And there's no hesitation in using that form of violence. So where is the wisdom of facing a government that is as violent as that and is proud to use that violence in a violent manner? So for me, I'm preaching peace. I'm preaching peaceful ways of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that happening. We've seen this flag coming through. We've
exactly.
seen Tejamuko. We've seen mm-hmm. Beat the Port. We've seen this gown coming up. And mm-hmm. I think we're going to see more of this. There's a new... citizen that's emerging in Zimbabwe, a citizen that's stronger, that's emboldened, that's younger, that's a bit courageous than what we've had in mm-hmm. the past, and that's to be commended. Mm-hmm. And when we make an advance using those peaceful means, when we get repressed and get tagged and arrested, I think that's when our neighbors perhaps ought to stand up and speak up in support of what
exactly,
they do.
Yes.
And we have seen with this flag, for instance, a number of voices have come across the region to support what's happening, because it's a non-violent means of saying 36 years of abuse, of corruption, of injustice and poverty. We can't just sit and watch.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for that, Mr. Ngwe. But going on to the second point that I'd asked, the when you were blacklisted by the SABC, whose government was that? Whose administration was that in South Africa? And what was the premise?
I wouldn't know. The people at SABC. I mean, that was during President Thabo Mbeki's government administration. It was. I'm trying to remember this guy who was news editor at SABC. There was an administration at SABC that was sympathetic To the government in Zimbabwe.
Exactly, yes.
And they were clearly working hand in hand, and they'd identified certain voices, and I was perceived to be one of those voices that should not be given a platform in South Africa via SABC, and they put that list. But also it was a list combined with, for instance, Eleanor Sisulu was in that list as a, you know, ex-Zimbabwean, but there were other people, South Africans, who were not allowed to, we were put on the list so that they wouldn't be allowed to come and participate in conversations relating to South African socio-political ongoings. I don't quite understand why that came about, but it was a terrible mistake that they did.
We've had that discussion here as well, where we said, I think one of the biggest letdowns that we've had from South Africa was Thabo Mbeki, especially during the time that the GNU was formed. Yeah, a lot was kept under the table. A lot was kept in drawers. You know, I remember there was a report that was done where he was prompted by SADC to, as a fact-finding mission in Zimbabwe, and that report never actually came out. So, I mean, it's disappointing. That's when we do say, okay, fine, when the Southern African community has actually decided to come in and do something, at least let it be done right.
Absolutely.
But the unfortunate thing, you know, we speak of solidarity in Africa. Mm. We don't have solidarity as African nations. Our statesmen have solidarity amongst themselves. So, you know, they support each other as individuals and support each other's individual claims. And it's unfortunate, which is what has led to...
I think the... answer to that is the, I mean, there's a perception that the AU is a group of, you know, politicians who've got similar interests, and mm-hmm. that they're not going to call each other out should the need arise. And I think it's to be expected. You've not mm-hmm. seen, except maybe for Botswana, from time to time, speaking up against Zimbabwe and so forth. There's a tendency to not want to criticize each other
exactly.
publicly.
Yeah.
But I think there's another dimension to this, and that is there's a lot of collaboration at civil society level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at citizen to citizen level, at civil society level, civil movements as it were, that's where we ought to give each other encouragement and sort of lobbying,
mm-hmm.
Hoping that if I get into trouble in Zimbabwe, there ought to be social movements here that sort of identify with the stuff that I might be doing in Zimbabwe to raise the voice and the temperature
mm-hmm.
on the South African mm-hmm. government, Zambia and so forth, to say, but you can't be allowing this kind of thing.
Exactly.
So I think there is a challenge there for us to be a bit more savvy and sophisticated in terms of how we lobby for our causes,
mm-hmm.
how we build alliances for our causes. Let's remember that during the liberation struggle, these liberation movements formed alliances.
Exactly.
And these alliances, you know, resulted in things like, you know, the formation of the frontline states, mm-hmm. the formation of the AU and that kind of stuff. So there's a similar interest at the top level there. So we need to, at the grassroots, at the people-to-people level, have the kind of similar alliances that mirror what happened during the liberation struggle.
That is perfect. And with looking at this flag and what the recent developments of this flag, which have blown up on social media, which was, first it was the pastor leaving, being seen in South Africa, and then from there on it was his move to the United States. What do you take, before I even ask any actual questions, what is your take on everything that has been going on social media?
On which particular issue?
On his move to the U.S. No. specifically.
Well, I think...
He has been called a traitor.
How can you call a man who started a movement a traitor?
Mm-hmm.
I think the there's something about us Zimbabweans. We love pull him down.
Mm-hmm.
We ought to stop and reflect what this man has done for us. This man, hardly 4 months ago, gave us, for the first time after a very long time, reason to believe in ourselves again.
Mm-hmm.
He encouraged us to speak up. He made us realize that fear, if you allow it to rule over you, is going to paralyze you. And we started speaking up.
Mm-hmm.
He also made us realize that the flag belonged to us. And we've reclaimed that flag and it's ours, to the extent that now, if you're seen with the flag getting into a cricket match, the police will try and stop you from doing that. So I think instead of criticizing the man, let's be grateful for what he's been able to do. He's made a choice to go to the U.S. and continue propagating the message of the movement and to the diaspora, because there's a lot of people in the diaspora.
Exactly.
At the last count, there was about in excess of 3 million people in the diaspora.
Yeah, that's true.
Who are not allowed to vote, but who've got an interest.
Mm-hmm.
The same people that are, in a way, funding the Zimbabwean government through remittances to Zimbabwe.
Yes, that's
those
very
people
true.
Ought to, yes. To be given the right to vote. They need to agitate for the right to vote. So I'm saddened when I see the criticism against Pastor Ivan Mawarire, because I think he has made a personal decision that the security of his family, the security of him, of himself is important, and he needs to move to the U.S. But he's not moving to the U.S. just to be on holiday.
Exactly.
He's
yeah.
continuing. Mm-hmm. You might have seen his videos.
Yes,
that kind
exactly.
of stuff. That
mm-hmm.
message continues. But we love dwelling on the negative. But here is the most important thing for me. The most important thing is Pastor Ivan Mawarire has said, you need to stand up and fight for your own freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You need to stand up and speak up. This flag is about you. It's about me. It's about all of us taking ownership of it and asking ourselves, what is it that I'm doing for my country? Rather than looking up to Pastor Ivan Mawarire to free us. We forget that. We complain about being ruled by one man for 36 years. Do we want to replace one man by another man?
Another man. We spoke about that as well. And we said to ourselves, you know what? I think the problem is there were a lot of individuals within this flag. They must have had some sort of a committee back home. And it is unfortunate that Pastor Evans' face was the one that was most prominent. And every movement does need a leader. Mm-hmm. But it was good when he then did say, well, okay, yes, I have started this. But as you have rightfully said now, it is up to all of us to then lead it after Absolutely. That. You know, and it is unfortunate. Zimbabweans do want to see one person doing everything for them.
Well, that's unfortunate because let's not cry foul. When one person
takes over.
When another Robert Mugabe is born, when we're trying to get rid of another Robert Mugabe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important. This is what, for me, is fundamentally important. Zimbabwe needs a new political culture.
Yes.
And it's a new political culture that says, you and I are empowered to stand up and speak out.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to wait for a big, strong man to come and liberate ourselves. But what is exciting for me is that we have seen citizens taking up Pastor Ivan's Mawarire's challenge. We have seen Tajamuka coming up.
Yes.
We have seen Beat the Port coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen This Gown coming up. We have seen other social movements
exactly,
coming up.
Yeah.
As a result of what Pastor Ivan has done. We have seen Zimbabweans in the diaspora, in their multitudes. Chapters of this flag are being formed all across the world, in Canada, in the US, in Australia, in the UK, and so forth. People have taken ownership. What this flag has done is simply to distribute what are the values of this flag.
Mm-hmm.
And people, knowing what those values are going ahead and organizing themselves and agitating for the things that are important to them. Because what I might agitate for as Trevor Ncube, which might be freedom of expression, press freedom, and so forth, is mm-hmm. different from what somebody who is in a different field altogether is going to agitate for. And all of us collectively standing up and demanding our rights, demanding to be governed properly, agitating for the things that we're passionate about, are going to change Zimbabwe. We need a new political culture. We don't need another Robert Mugabe.
From there, I mean, and that's perfect. But I was going to ask, where do you see the future of Zimbabwe? Where do you see the immediate future, and then where do you see us towards 2018? Considering individuals like Joyce Mujuru's People First, we have Tendai Biti's People's Democratic Party, then we have Viva by AC Lumumba. Can I get your personal thoughts on AC Lumumba, Mr. Ngobe?
He's a bright young man,
mm-hmm.
but I was disappointed by the statement that he made at his launch, which mm-hmm. then grabbed the headline and got him into
it. It was meant to,
you can't want you cannot replace an abusive, repressive, insulting regime by insulting them.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. you know, would expect that a young man like AC would refashion himself as a new politician, a new exactly. generation politician.
Exactly.
We're expecting a generational change. And when a young man stands up to insult an old mm-hmm. man, I lose respect for
exactly.
the young man.
Exactly. And my biggest problem with AC, I've met him on a number of occasions. I know a lot of people who know him, were the numerous changes in his life. From name changes at one moment, I used to be an intern in the White House. I went to Harvard. And then I think there's just too much, he has too much baggage. Mm. And having come recently out of ZANU-PF, I think he should have taken some time off to really sit down and reinvent himself. Allow us to believe that, you know what, guys, I am actually genuinely a different individual. I've had genuine concerns with the direction of this party, and now I'm coming to say no more of that. And having been on the inside, I will show you what has been done and the mistakes that have been made.
Yeah.
Politically, where do you see us going? Do you see a transitional entity? Do you see this man stepping down? And then there are the talks of a coalition of parties to prepare for 2018.
You know, I think I'm very optimistic about the medium to long term. I'm worried about the here and the near term.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of turbulence in the next 6 to 9 months, 12 months, 15 months before the elections in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's going to be a lot of ruptures inside ZANU-PF itself.
Yes.
And the fighting in ZANU-PF itself could turn very dangerous and could turn violent. I don't rule out assassinations of some sort because mm-hmm. the stakes are very high
mm-hmm.
and the temperature is very high
yes.
amongst those that are contesting for
and protesting. It wouldn't be the first time that they've killed each other
They, that's been the name of the game in Zambia, in Mozambique, and, mm-hmm. and indeed it's continued in post-independence Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. I mean, who killed Rex Nongo? We don't know
exactly,
Rex Nongo, but mm-hmm. clearly it was an assassination. So I fear that kind of instability taking place, and that in itself might affect you know, the stability of the state, because you're talking about the military being divided, you're talking about the intelligence being divided mm-hmm. along the factions that that around Grace Mugabe, that around the other camp,
mm-hmm.
and then you have the division within the opposition political party. I'm encouraged to see the efforts to try and build a coalition.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
My only criticism is it's coalition around individuals. It's not coalition around principles
yes.
and values.
Yes.
So we're coalescing. What are we coalescing around? We're coalescing around individuals. I think for me, and coalescing around one thing, we want Robert Mugabe to go. But what do we want to replace him with?
Mm-hmm.
For me, those are important things. That's where my passion for a new political culture comes into place. The social movements that are taking place, this flag and everything else, I think those movements are going to demand accountability for anybody that is in politics.
We're not going to make the same mistakes that we made
we
with
shouldn't
ZANU-PF
allow, we shouldn't allow that
as citizens.
And
yes.
Which is why the issue about we should not replace another Robert Mugabe with another one.
Mm-hmm.
Then there comes another issue that says, you know, we are such a broken society. Infrastructure is broken, state institutions are broken. Do we just have an election and somebody wins election and carries on and does what? Which is why some of us have been, you know, trying to agitate for a national transitional mechanism,
mm-hmm.
whereby we have a transitional space that allows for us to deal with the issues.
Exactly. The day-to-day bread and butter issues that people are... Yeah.
Not even that. I mean, we need a new constitution. We need mm-hmm. new electoral laws. I mean, how do we get into an election
now? Voters' role.
Yes, all that kind of stuff. So this is a total mess. That requires some form of national conversation,
mm-hmm.
some form of reflection, if we are to arrive at a new Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
Because in allowing ZANU-PF to win the elections, it means it's just going to be business as usual.
Exactly.
I'm not so sure that if the coalition that is going to come out of these people, if they got in, they would change some of these things.
Mm.
The tendency with politicians is once you give them instruments that empower them. For them to want to dilute that,
it does not make sense politically
absolutely.
For them.
So we didn't see, for instance, MDC when they came in, for them agitating and actually coming with a parliamentary program that would result in some of these laws being diluted. We must remember that some of the laws that Robert Mugabe is using right now are Ian Smith laws.
Exactly, yes.
Robert Mugabe and his friends went to fight this war that and contributed to liberating us. Mm-hmm. They come in and they use the same laws that Ian Smith
as you said,
against.
I mean, if they empower them, then what's the point of changing them?
So to your question, you know, I see instability, but I would be surprised even if ZANU-PF rigged, even with the current rules, that ZANU-PF would win the next election. It's going to be tough.
It's going to be very tough for
them.
It's
going to be painful. Mm-hmm. ZANU-PF is one tool in their toolbox, and that is violence.
That's it.
They will deploy it against the people. But my sense is that the people might be brutalized, might be assaulted, but inside, people know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
People are fed up of ZANU-PF.
This is probably,
they want something new.
I think there has been a resurrection as Zimbabweans. I've never seen this before. I was only born in 1986, but it was surprising. One of the most beautiful things that I saw was Tudor Bismarck amongst 3,000 people right outside of court when Pastor Evan was being released. Zimbabweans, I've always seen fear. I was with Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights after high school and then after university. And we saw a lot of these things. You know, we were arrested on multiple occasions. And people, our friends, would be like, but why? Why did you just But now everyone has said to themselves, no, enough is enough. Maybe because the money is not there. Maybe because opportunities are not there. But it's definitely a very different and epic stage of our history as Zimbabweans. And Pastor Evan has managed to...
Absolutely. And that's what we should be doing. You know, for me, I've been at this now since 1989.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the forefront. I was in the forefront of stopping a one-party state, one-man rule in Zimbabwe. So it's a struggle that I've seen since 1989. I've been arrested. I've been harassed. I've had my passport taken away, my citizenship taken away. But because I believe passionately in a Zimbabwe that is free, in a country that we work for our children and our children follow their dreams, at the moment, what Zimbabwean has a dream? Mm-hmm. What Zimbabwean has an opportunity to follow their dreams? So Pastor Evan has suddenly made us realize that it's possible to stand up and speak up. But the manner in which the government has reacted, you know, says to ourselves, there was Itai Dzamara the other day.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And when that happened to Itai Dzamara, some people are saying, what was he doing?
And we spoke about it with the boys from Tajamuga here on the show. And we said, you know, Zimbabwe failed Itai Dzamara's family and Itai Dzamara himself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there needed to be some sort of support or an outreach to say, guys, how does a man just go missing?
But there's been that. I think we are selfish. We are cowards.
That is true.
We don't support each other. We're very good at criticizing each other. But it's because of the way we've been raised as a society.
Mm-hmm.
Our role models have, if Robert Mugabe is a role model, if Jonathan Boy is a role model, you know, they insult, they do all sorts of things. We have not, as a nation, focused on building individuals, building societies, building institutions. You build a country, you build a society by building an individual.
Exactly.
But what we've seen happening is the individual gets torn down, the individual gets brutalized. And people lose confidence, which is why when people see you talking politics, they say, but why are you doing it?
Exactly.
Why don't you do other things?
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing that there's a connection.
Exactly. Ms. Ngube, to conclude, as you were rightfully saying, you know, speaking about development of the youth and, you know, development of conversation to build the nation. We've seen you very active on social media, especially Twitter. You've been engaging the youth a lot, and it's... in its own right, a form of mentorship. Where do you see that going? Where do you see the youth of Zimbabwe taking their country? And what role would you like to play in assisting?
Well, I think for me, for Zimbabwe to move forward, we need to give space for the people that will spend more time in the Zimbabwe that we're trying to build. This is an opportunity for a generational change. This is an opportunity for the millennials to take over, to begin calling the tune and not to stand on the sidelines. This is an opportunity to see the millennials getting involved in politics, and indeed in all facets of our lives, rather than being spectators. And for them to realize that nobody's going to come from heaven to empower them.
That's true.
They've got to empower themselves. They've got to empower themselves. And this is what this flag has been preaching. You've got to empower the people. This thing that you've got to wait for seeds and fertilizer from ZANU-PF is nonsense. You got to go work out and your keep and buy your seed and buy your fertilizer.
Exactly.
I'm very passionate about the young people, because the young people are the future of Zimbabwe. Educating the young people, and it breaks my heart when I see where Zimbabwe is at the present moment. When I see amazing young people who could be doing huge things, but who are totally disempowered by the environment, the economic environment. You get up in the morning, there's no power. You have no water. You transport is a problem. And how do you become creative in an environment where we live in a knowledge world, knowledge economy? How do you become creative when you worry about the basics? The people who built Google and Twitter have done so because the basics are taken care of.
Exactly.
But if I'm going to worry about where am I going to get the generator, electricity, water, and that kind of stuff,
you can't be creative.
You know, you're worrying about potholes and that kind of stuff. You cannot be creative. This is, for me, the biggest crime that ZANU-PF has committed. Blowing away the dreams of millions of young people.
There's no hope. People wake up to no hope, absolutely, no aspirations.
Absolutely. But that's changing. I think this flag has made people begin to love the country again. Begin to make people dream again and hope again. And it's sad if people get fixated on the fact that the pastor has moved to the States. He's coming back. He's going to come back. But let's not focus on the man. Let's focus on the vision and the mission that he set us up for us.
I think that is definitely true. Thank you so much, Mr. Ngube. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Being on the show.
Your mentorship is appreciated. Please continue the struggle.
Thank you.
Do not disappear.
Thank you.
Zim Conversations, cliffcentral.com. We had another amazing episode with the media professional Trevor Ngube. You can follow him on Twitter. It's
at Trevor Ngube.
At Trevor Ngube. That's the Mail and Guardian Media Group, South Africa, and AMH Zimbabwe. Till next time, cliffcentral.com. We're out.
Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
cliffcentral.com.